We are.
Can you just bring this over here?
Give the woman her booze.
Okay.
We are recording. What up, what up? Welcome to Mind Your Hives Beekeeping. This is episode 17, I think. I am your host, Greg Lehman. Joined by my beautiful wife, Kara Jo.
Hello, hello.
Today was Kara Jo's first day back to school.
Sure was.
As a teacher. She's a high school teacher by day, superhero beekeeper, alchemist, meditation, yoga teacher by night, or all the other times, by summer. But today was Kara's first day back, and I was like, you know what? I want to have something special for her. And if you listened into our last episode, the B-side with... cocktails with mixologist Mike Landers. We made, Mike made this beautiful cocktail called an airmail.
He made honey cocktails, and we talked about...
Yeah, so I decided, you know what? I bought a bottle of Prosecco. The state store here near us had this organic one called Mio Netto. Seems perfectly fine.
Yeah, I like it.
And we already had the Jamaican rum and the lemon juice and the honey simple. So
and we're using mint from the garden.
Threw a little mint in there for fun, but cheers, honey.
Yeah, cheers.
You're one day down.
Woo!
This is so good.
We're going to sip right now.
But I have to give a shout out to Mike Landers on Instagram. It is Landers Drinks or Bar Sylvia Philly. But Mike spoke, or he was our first ever guest, and we just talked about using honey in cocktails, and we talked about herb infusions, and I mean, deep dive into honey simple, and we talked about a few cocktails, and we've really been having fun.
I mean, I've been having fun. You've been making cocktails. I've just been having fun drinking them.
Yeah, I feel like your knowledge base grew.
Oh, totally. And I don't even make cocktails, and I mean, I'll be like, hey, what do I do? But I learned so much, and just like an appreciation and like an understanding.
Yeah, like a little deeper understanding of what's going on.
Yeah, and he's not serious about it. He's just like, play around with it. Try these things out.
That's what I've been doing. I've just been kind of subbing something in and out, and like, I have so much more confidence making cocktails. Plus, I swung by the thrift store after Mike gave me this disappointing look about our lack of any type of nice glassware.
Our mason jar cocktail glasses.
And for 45 cents, I got some sweet glass.
Yeah, they really are glasses. Beautiful. I feel like my grandmother like owned these.
I hope she did.
Yeah, they're awesome.
So this has also been a little bit of inspiration. But y'all, if you haven't listened to it, go back and listen to the B-side. It's these B-side episodes we're doing. They are kind of, you know, beekeeper adjacent, or things that I think we think beekeepers will be into, we're into, that are kind of connected. Coming soon is a rad episode that we just recorded with Tom Pearsall of Everwild Farm about just farming in general, but regenerative organic farming that they're doing and stuff we're doing. We had such a fun...
That can really apply to anybody. Cool. Yeah.
So I'm excited to release that soon, but let's dive into what's going on in our apiary right now. This is one of those timely episodes that I really wanted to get out. It's rare I can get Kara to do an episode during the week, but you were into it.
I'm like, let's do an episode. Let's drink cocktails in an episode.
But I was like, I said to her the other day, hey, we're starting to do some stuff in the apiary that is sort of this change. It's like prepping for winter prep.
Pre-prep.
I mean, everything in beekeeping is pre-prep. But I was at a local bee supply store. Shout out to our friends at BeeWorks in Trumbowersville, Pennsylvania. So Bucks County, Pennsylvania, BeeWorks. Check them out.
Do they ship?
I don't know if they ship, but I wouldn't be surprised if they shipped.
Okay.
But if you go, I think it's BeeWorksPA.com. But if you look up BeeWorks, you'll find it. They're great. And I was talking to my buddy over there, Mike, and he was like, man, what we're doing right now, it determines how the honey's going to be next year. And I was like, dude, that is so the truth. And we had a few hives like limp out of winter last year, and those hives, they haven't given us the honey crop. And you know, that's fine. It's bees first, honey second in our apiaries, no doubt about it. But I like to think, what could we have done differently? Granted, last year was just this crazy
anomaly.
Yeah, that we couldn't control, tornado, hurricane, blah, 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 that we dealt with. But what could we have done differently, or what happened that made them limp out of winter? You know, they went into winter and we're like, oh man, they had a pretty big mite population, but we were able to knock it down. But here's the thing. Winter bees are starting to be made. And if you don't know about winter bees, we're going to do a deep dive here. So winter bees, Kara calls them
fat bees. I don't call them fat bees. Lots of people call them fat bees.
Fat bees. Because literally there are, you can look at these bees now and go, huh, oh, it's totally a winter bee. These are fatter bees.
Yeah, they really are. I was like, but yeah. And they have fat bodies. They have.
Yeah. Like, so they're literally using these fat bodies to store all these nutrients, the same nutrients that the summer and spring bees would get by just eating pollen. So I think I have some just like what's going on with
you've got
the
all kinds of notes over here.
Yeah, I mean, okay, so honey to a bee is just a carbohydrate. I mean, I guess to us too. It's just a carbohydrate, which I kind of refer to as just energy.
Right.
You know, so the bees are just getting their energy, and in the winter, the energy they need is to vibrate those bodies to create warmth and to create a warm environment so the queen stays alive and they stay alive. And that's what's going on. Everything else that they get comes from pollen. All the other nutrients they get. So the protein, the minerals, the vitamins, the lipids, those same 10 amino acids that we need to survive, they also need.
I think there's 20, by the way.
20? I thought it was 10 specific amino acids that the bees like, couldn't survive without, and neither could humans.
Yeah. Well, so you have like 20. I think it's 20. And you can make a certain amount, and then you need to go out and forage another amount.
Okay, so I'm assuming then it's the 10 that you get foraging.
They're the essential amino acids.
Are the same 10 amino acids.
Yeah.
So in the winter, they're not eating pollen, really. You know, there's some pollen in the hive, but for the most part, they are storing all those same nutrients, all that protein, all those minerals, all those vitamins, all those lipids. They're storing those in their fat bodies. And then this is so mind-blowing to me. Come late winter, very early spring, which, you know, for us, like late January, early February, queen starts laying eggs again. They start raising brood. They're actually feeding that brood from their own fat bodies.
Before pollen is available.
Those are the nutrients that these young, this larva is getting to come out of winter and then have, because these bees, so winter bees, fat bees, they can live like 6 months. Right. I mean, give or take.
Right.
So, I mean, they're starting to get made right
like,
now.
Versus like, what, 45, 60
yeah,
days?
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, if you think about it, they start getting made now. We've seen many queens, they're done in October. You won't find any eggs or brood in November.
I'm already seeing in some of my hives, like, they're...
definite drop-off.
Yeah.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And because they know we can't make too many bees... because they're going to eat all the food. We need to regulate the amount of bees being made, and those bees need to be healthier.
Which I think is important for like new beekeepers to know that there's already a drop off. Because do you remember
what happened? Yeah. Our queen's not laying.
Yes, we were so worried about it, and then you just
like
get
who has a frame
experience.
Of eggs. I need to put a frame of eggs in.
Yeah, yeah. So yep. That's normal.
That was early on.
Yeah.
So. Here's what's crazy. Those fat bodies that we're talking about that make these fat bees, that is what mites feed on. Mites feed on fat body. Forever, beekeepers thought it was hemolymph. It was like the equivalent of blood in a bee.
Like
I think it's called a hemolymph. Like, it's not. It's the fat bodies. Shout out Dr. Ramsey. I think Sam Ramsey was the one
it was Sam Ramsey.
Really dialed this in.
The and most he's just fun... like,
we always joke.
Bee scientists.
You know, Sam always says what's up after our episodes.
No, he doesn't. He's like,
I think he would love it. We've had some really fun conversations. He's such a good dude.
Yeah, he's a fun guy.
He was on like Good Morning America a few times.
Was he?
Yeah, recently, yeah. I think.
Yeah, he's doing all awesome work.
Yeah, so it's the fat bodies they're feeding on. So the same life force that is all the fat bodies is what these mites are chewing on. So guess what? If you have a high mite population right now, your bees aren't going in 100% of their life force.
Yeah.
You know, if they, and you all right, dude, I was going to bring this up later on.
Okay, go ahead.
I just learned this. So a larva, a mite is in the cell, right? A Varroa mite, Varroa destructor mite is in the cell. It's chewing. They typically chew the same spot on the larva. And that spot ends up being under the left wing of the bee when the bee then develops. Under their left wing, they then have a soft spot. Later on in their life, mites know there's a soft spot. And mites go, and that's where they start chomping away at this soft spot that they can then get into and suck the fat body from. So when a bee gets, when mites are in the cell, they start chewing on the larva, and then that larva still develops into a bee that then has a soft spot that the mite goes back to and eats from the adult mite, not the same mite, new mites.
Yeah, they like know, like rats.
They know there might be the soft spot under the left wing, and that's where they go, and then it's easier access. It's like the vampire bite has already been made. I know. I didn't tell you this when I learned it the other day. I was like, can't wait to tell Kara.
Yeah, you had all this info. I'm like, don't tell me. I'll learn it later.
We don't talk to each other except for through the microphone. So you got to control your mite population. Or, you know, even if you're treatment free, I get it. We're all after the same end goal, to not treat. Or at least we don't want to treat. And we only treat with organic methods. So that's, you know, Formic Pro, that is oxalic acid. And then that's a lot of,
I think the goal IPM is not to, I mean, yeah, it's not to treat, but it's to breed
for the, yeah,
it's strong bees that don't need treatment. So if that's there's treatment free people, it's not just not treating. It's, can I track this situation? Who's handling the mites? Who's not?
So if I want to breed, even from? If I was not a treatment-free beekeeper, and Dr. Tom Seeley,
you mean even if you were a you said even if I wasn't,
even if I was a treatment-free beekeeper, and I kind of followed Dr. Tom Seeley, and I Darwinian beekeeping, I think is how he refers to it, but you still got to track the mites and see what these mite loads are, and also the one, this is such a divisive topic, which sucks because beekeeping is generally something that can cross over the divisive barriers of the world, of the political world, I should say. But this treatment-free versus not treating is such a divisive topic.
It's too bad, man.
But when your bees are infested with disease, that disease gets crossed over into native pollinators.
Scott McArt was talking about the research on that.
Yep, the McArt lab at Cornell University has done really great research on this, but that's the thing I come back to, is it's not, we're not just hurting the bees aren't just hurting themselves, or we're not just, you know, letting these bees die for themselves and hoping, cool, survival of the fittest, the ones that can't handle it die off and the ones that can get to procreate, and that's how we get out of this thing. But while that's happening, you've got to have blinders on to not realize it's affecting native pollinators. And no offense, beekeepers, native pollinators are a lot more important than our stupid honeybees.
I don't know if they're not stupid,
but you know what I'm saying. Compared to native pollinators, for in this environment, in our world, the native pollinators, we need to think of them first. So I don't want to get on too much of a pedestal about it, but like the reason I say you still need should track your Varroa levels and see what's going on is because there's other effects that are beyond your bees.
Yeah, it's responsible beekeeping. It's treat, you know, make your decisions, but do it responsibly. So I think that's fine.
So if mite levels are really high right now, they're chewing away that fat body, which means if your bee, say 100% life force in it, it can live 6 months. All of a sudden, you got a bee chomping on its underwing and eating that those fat bodies and sucking the life force out. Now maybe they only have 60% left, 70% left, which means they can only live 4.5 months.
Well, also then
5 months.
They don't have the fat bodies to feed the brood in the early winter. And then talk about like honey production. They're not going to be able to feed.
Yeah, so you're setting yourself up for absolute disaster if you do not get these levels under control. So we're monitoring. We have yet to treat in our apiary. We have a couple hives that we volunteer at, and we have treated those hives because their mite levels were at a level that we were not comfortable with. But I have yet to get a sample size of more than 1.3% mite load in our apiary at our home location that has about 30 hives.
I also thought it was interesting,
which is 4 mites in a 300 bee sample.
a teacher that I had just talked about the health of your bees now. These are the bees that are feeding the bees that are creating the winter bees. So it's not just you want healthy winter bees. You want a healthy population going into the pre-prep of winter so that they can build healthy winter bees.
Did I dive into amino acids? Did I get into all the...
No, but I've learned about amino acids in my... I'm taking an anatomy and physiology herbal course and I'm learning about it.
Do you want to drop some knowledge?
Not maybe. I can add some stuff, but spotlight. I don't... Is that your joke? Is that your applause for your joke?
I just realized I hadn't pressed the laugh button in a little bit and I got antsy.
It's applause button.
Applause, not laugh. You're right.
Maybe you need a little bit more cocktail.
Ja. All right. So
amino acids.
Yeah. So we were talking about pollen and the importance of pollen and the importance of these nutrients. And it's these amino acids that these bees need in order to survive. And weirdly enough, the same 10 amino acids that bees need to survive, humans also need to survive.
Essential amino acids, yeah.
And I think the only substance that like contains all 10 amino acids is pollen.
And they need a variety, so...
A variety, meaning those 10
different amino acids. So that's why monocultures are bad, because you are only getting one type of pollen, and if the bees aren't fulfilling all of those essential... If they're not getting all of those essential amino acids, they might as well get none. So
here's what's crazy, too. These winter bees, these fat bees, are storing these amino acids in their fat bodies, right? If all 10 are not present...
I just said this.
No, but specifically, if all 10 aren't present, the winter bees just won't rear brood.
Yeah.
They're like, we don't have the right juice in us. We're not even going to try. So in the spring and summer, this is why bees can survive a little bit on monoculture, is that in the spring and summer, if all those amino acids aren't present, so, you know, these bees are thrown only into almond fields, they're not getting all the amino acids they need. Brood rearing just decreases. They still will rear brood and they'll still feed them, but they're just feeding them not as good of a diet, which means they're not as healthy of bees, but they're still doing it. In the winter, when they are starting in the, you know, late January, early February, in our environment, starting to rear brood, if those 10 amino acids aren't present, they ain't doing it at all.
Hmm.
So really, really, really important. And you totally beat me to it, that whole monoculture thing. It's exactly what that is.
Yeah. So amino acids build proteins. That's my knowledge drop.
Oh, okay. That makes sense. So I think the term CCD, colony collapse disorder, I think it's a little overused.
Do people still say that? I don't hear people saying that anymore.
I think our beekeeping circle probably doesn't, because we've had so many, we've all, you know, listened to the same speakers. I mean, most of the people we deal with are in our club. Have heard the same speakers, where we don't say CCD, we go a little deeper and we say the specific issues, not just this kind of blanket term. I mean, Kara often brings up PMS, parasitic mite syndrome.
I wish it was,
which is also kind of a blanket term.
Totally a blanket term.
But here's some crazy stuff, right? So the Davis-Thompson lab, I wish I wrote in my notes where that was and which speaker specifically it was that I learned this from. But the Davis-Thompson lab did these really, really in-depth studies and analyses and found that neonicotinoids, so Roundup, and there's a ton of other pesticides and herbicides, but Roundup is just the easy one to say that everybody knows and unfortunately is sprayed in our mouths basically on a daily basis. Neonicotinoid dosage in queens led to 26% smaller mandibular glands. The mandibular glands is where royal jelly gets created. So 26% smaller mandibular glands in her young, in
got
her
it. Workers.
Workers. So ipso facto, you know, that overused term CCD, a lot of it, I think, can be kind of partially explained by looking at the pollen nutrition that these bees are getting and the drop off that has occurred. And I will say, I only listen to a couple beekeeping podcasts. Most of them are just, I just can't.
They're not drinking cocktails.
They're not crushing cocktails. And I don't know. They're not really giving real world experience. But I did listen to Beekeeping Today. I think that's the Bee Culture one.
Okay.
And they,
is that with the two old dudes?
I don't know. One old dude. Okay. I'm so bad with names.
Whatever. But yeah, okay.
But by old dude, meaning like editor of Bee Culture magazine forever. That dude's great.
It's not what I'm thinking of.
But they had somebody on there that talked about how these neonicotinoids are being uptaken into the flowering and into the pollen, because it's built into the seeds of these plants.
Of the GMOs.
So then the nutrition level coming out of the plant in this pollen is already worse. So again, ipso facto, I'm putting two and two together myself, which doesn't mean it's 100% accurate, but GMO plants and these pesticides, because they're linked, the reason they're GMO plants is so they can, you know, handle more of these pesticides, is just putting out a weaker product, and all these amino acids aren't present. So of course the bees, they have a decreased brood production. Of course we're seeing die off. Of course we're not seeing as healthy hives going into winter. And we can't control what's being fed to them around us. We can't control past our property line.
Well, you know what's interesting, just like about how this affects us in a...
I feel like I get on a little bit of a pedestal with this because it's just so frustrating to me.
Yeah, I don't know if you're giving on a pedestal, right. But...
I don't want to be that guy, but it's still just... sad to me.
So I was interning at a farm, organic regenerative farm, which...
Shout out Everwild Farm.
Yeah, which we're going to talk... We talked to Tom from it, but so whatever. I was talking to his brother, Tim. He owns the farm, and we just like talked all summer while I was out there working. And just the fact that GMO corn, because corn's hard to grow, and he was growing organic corn. GMO corn has...
I feel like organic corn is hard to grow. I feel like regular corn's easy to grow. I don't know. Is that not true?
That's what I meant. Organic corn is hard to grow. But GMO corn has altered our, as human beings, DNA.
That's insane.
So, but it's the same kind of thing. If you know what I mean? Like, I don't know if it's their DNA that's making that mandibular gland smaller, but it's having great effects.
Yeah. And I mean, on top of that, habitat loss. I mean, habitat loss is less variety for bees to forage. It's less natural variety. So, you know... They need this broad spectrum non-monoculture food sources, these food sources. And it's harder and harder to come by.
And also, we talk about this in this regenerative episode, but...
The B-side.
Yeah, we just...
With Farmer Tom.
You'll love it. We just throw different grass seeds and different, like, wildflower seeds.
Cover crops.
Yeah, we just throw it all over the place. Like, it doesn't have to be that complicated. Don't overthink it.
So anyway, the reason I got on that little pedestal was because these fat bees, these winter bees, they need all of this really great nutrition in order to do their work properly. So, again, you might be able to limp through some spring and summer with bees that aren't as healthy, but man, come winter, you are going to see it and they're not going to survive. And it's like, well, I mean, my bees were pretty good all summer. I can't believe they didn't survive winter. It's like, you know what? Like, dig a little deeper. They weren't that good.
And if you just start looking at the brood, that's just like a game changer. That Penn State Field book, we've talked about it before.
Oh, yeah, Penn State Field
Guide. There's like good pictures, field guide. That's an easy way to start looking at things and noticing like, huh, maybe not everything's exactly going, you know, look a little bit closer.
So beyond mites and the life force they're sucking out of our bees going into winter, obviously you need to make sure that they have stored enough food. So, all right. I can tell you right now, there are beekeepers that just take a 60-pound, 50-pound block of sugar and put it in their beehive and go, you don't need stores, you got this to eat, and that's how we're going to overwinter you. Because honey is more expensive than sugar, so I can make more money by taking every drop of your honey and substituting in sugar, and hey, that's their prerogative.
Are you talking about dry sugar people do that with?
Like fondant, like a huge block of fondant, or, you know. That's not how we roll. We're trying to... to get these bees as natural as possible, to be able to overwinter themselves. Because again, when you can, when the bees can do it themselves and you can prove it, then you breed from that stock, and you, that's how I think we get to better bees. But we are in southeastern Pennsylvania, and I think it's about 60 to 80 pounds of honey each hive needs to survive. I'm talking a typical 8 or 10 frame hive. Nukes, totally
different
story.
And we don't have scale, so you're really good at figuring out how much that is.
Because, okay, when you pick up, when you pick up a medium, so we use mediums, when you pick up an 8 or 10 frame medium, you know, that's about 30-ish pounds of honey if it's full. So typically two mediums for us will equal a little more than 5 gallons of honey when we extract. And 5 gallons of honey weighs 60 pounds.
Wow, I feel real weak right now because 30 pounds feels real heavy to me.
Yeah, but you're not factoring in the wood and the frames. I'm talking strictly the honey that's on that. Still, so that frame, weighs way more than that on its own. I mean, each frame has 1.5 to 2 pounds of just wax on it.
Okay.
So, I mean, add another.
I'm you're so, so buff. Beefy.
Yeah, that's like 60. So basically, they need like 2 full boxes of honey. We harvested, we had like our main harvest this year. We try to harvest seasonally. We really like the differences in the honey, but we did our main harvest, throughout the month of July. So starting like July 8th. And then we did have some hives. And now here's the thing to remember too. We're growing our apiary. So, you know, it's not like we're some commercial operation that has 100 hives and, you know, the next year they've got 100 hives again, and they're you know, harvesting from 100 hives, and they're doing the same thing to 75 hives at once and blah, 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 blah. We're like, oh, every hive is different. I mean, literally we have full pages of notes on every one of our hives, and they're all totally different. So when one hive's ready to harvest, you know, for a commercial operation, that typically would mean every hive is ready to harvest. It's not that way for us. But we started our main summer extraction and harvesting early July, but we also had like a pretty nice bump that first week of August. And then after that first week of August, it's been drought city
so
up
bad.
Until like yesterday we got a little bit of rain, but it's been so bad.
I was like, I'm like, Greg, he was at work. I was like, Greg, call me. I have wonderful news. I was like, it was raining today.
I'm like, God, what is this, water world?
It's so beautiful out.
Or not water world?
Yeah, the opposite of water world.
Although, no, I think water world, like, they don't get rain because they...
I've never watched that movie. I think it might be terrible.
We should go back and watch it. I think it's a Turner classic.
Mm.
Anyway. So they need 2 full boxes of... and, you know, there's single deep brood. There's single deep method. There's different methods. We are typical, like, 3 medium boxes to overwinter. So I know that they need 2. I've watched most of our hives have 1 super on them right now. So 3 mediums in the brood chamber, 1 medium on top as this honey super. I've noticed that they have started storing in that 3rd brood chamber box. So they have 2 boxes that the queen is making bees in, and they've started to pack the 2nd floor, and obviously they're packing the attic, which is that honey super. We had maybe 20% of our hives out there had 2 supers on them up in like a week to today. And most of them, I went in and I actually took the weaker of the two, or what I did was I rearranged the frames. So I made 1 super, the majority, you know, heavier frames. And then I put a inner cover on top of it. And then I take that 2nd super or just, you know, the next 9 or 10 frames that didn't have as much on them, and I put it above the inner cover. And when you do, and then the lid goes on top. When you do that, the bees will actually go and they will take the nectar and honey that was in the frames that's at the very top above the inner cover, and they'll bring those down and store them in the hive.
Basically clean the frames that you can use next year.
Now, say we didn't have this crazy drought in August, I have a feeling our bees would have been able to fill both of those boxes no problem. We would have been able to take them, you know, between now and mid-September. We would have been able to take them, harvest, and then they would have had enough time with our late fall flow to fill their stores. I don't think it's happening. So I'm hoping we can still, with Goldenrod kicking and Aster about to start and Knotweed, and they do get some pollen from Ragweed, which is cool. No nectar, though. But from those fall plants that we have that pop in our area, I'm hoping they'll be able to get at least, we'll be able to get one more box of honey. But if that doesn't happen within the next 2-3 weeks, that's all staying for them. We're not going to harvest. We're giving that to them. And I'll actually take any other super and I'll put that above the inner cover and I'll let them bring that down into what we call their brood chamber.
Yeah, as soon as that stinky, I don't get the gym socks, but as soon as that like
musty,
stinky, I just love it. It smells so like sweet. Goldenrod honey smell stops.
Yeah.
The flow is over.
So shout out to Steve Rapaski. He just spoke at the Montgomery County Beekeepers Association general meeting. But he's a Pittsburgh beekeeper, used to be state, he was president of the Pennsylvania State Beekeepers Association. He's a part of all kinds of stuff, but he just gave a really great speech or presentation in our meeting. I mean, it was a speech.
I had a dream.
Strategery. He straight up said it too. He's like, when the goldenrod smell is happening right now, when that smell stops, I know the flow is totally over. And it's take the frames or leave them for the bees.
So I don't know. I'm kind of going rogue with this comment, but I've just like as human beings, we actually are very sensitive to like light waves. And I know bees, like as they leave, actually it's like about the heat in the hive. Like the hive has to be a certain temperature for them to leave in the morning.
Okay.
Is that true? I'm just wondering what the hive signals. Warms up. Like, and you might not know this.
The sun going down sooner.
It does. It is light. So the changes in this whole behavior is like light.
Yep. As the days are extending, the bees understand that. As the days are waning. Wainscoting.
Because it's not temperature, because it's still hot as hell here. Okay.
I'm glad you brought up temperature.
Yeah.
So, all right. Say you are like, man, I don't think my bees have stored enough on their own. What do we do? We got you. It's fine. There are actually studies that show that bees can consume the honey that they make from being fed sugar. They can consume that, and it takes them less energy to digest it as it does straight up honey. So I was like, I don't want to feed sugar syrup to bees. I feel like it can't be as good as the natural stuff. And then there are some studies that show it's perfectly fine to do. You'll want to feed your bees 2-to-1, two parts by weight. So 2-to-1, sugar to water. So it's like, I think the equivalent, you go, if you did 10 pounds of sugar, it would be 10 cups of water.
Yeah, because it's
so 2 cups of water is 1 pound.
Yeah.
And like 1 cup of sugar, or 1 pound of sugar is 1 pound of sugar. Man, that sounded so
I don't think anybody
dumb.
Understood that. Say it again.
1 pound is 2 cups of water. Right. 2 cups of water weighs 1 pound. 1 pound of sugar weighs 1 pound. So you would go 2 cups. So if you did, if you wanted 2 parts sugar to 1 part water, it would be the equivalent of 10 pounds of sugar and 10 cups of water.
Yes.
Cool.
That's it.
Yeah. 1-to-1 is 20 cups of water to 10 pounds
of
sugar.
Which I always in the beginning was like, wait, that seems like 2-to-1.
No, it's hard to even say.
Yeah.
It.
Yeah.
And we're talking cups to pounds. You did it. I got to it. If you listen to the Bee Cocktails episode, you'll probably hear me just not be good at math.
I think you edited that part out.
We don't edit anything out. So anyway, they need 60 pounds. They need like 2 full supers of honey in order to have enough to survive this winter. And so you got to feed them.
And doesn't that 2-to-1 signal like end of brood rearing too?
So 1-to-1 signals nectar flow. That's the same consistency of nectar coming in. So they're like, holy shit, we have access to all this nectar. There must be a flow going on. Let's make as much brood as possible. Let's make these summer bees. We're good. You start giving them 2-to-1 and it's the equivalent of like, oh, we need to store this
thick
honey, this viscous, thicker, yeah. this dehydrated nectar. We need to store it. So they go into storage mode. You can feed syrup as long as the temperature is 50 degrees or above. If
you mean 2 to 1.
I said syrup.
Oh, any syrup.
Correct.
Got it.
I think I said syrup.
You did. I just.
Yeah. So if it dips below 50 degrees, the bees aren't going to touch it. The reason they're not going to touch it is because it cools their body down so much that they aren't able to fly or anything. So they're just genetically, they know if something is more than 50 degrees, is under 50 degrees, we shouldn't take it. It's going to cool us too much. So that's when you have to feed them dried food or, you know, like a fondant patty or a sugar cake or whatever. So as long as daytime temperatures are 50 degrees, and remember, the hive is a little warmer. So the way we feed, I don't think you should open feed syrup. I don't really think you should open feed anything. We'll do a little bit of pollen in like March, and we'll put it in a feeder and see if the bees go to it. But otherwise, I really prefer keeping things in the hive. So
why? Why do you?
I don't sharing, robbing, fighting.
Disease.
You just, there's no need for it. Plus, it means you're giving it away to other things.
Well, also,
other insects are getting it. Bees from somebody else's property might be coming and eating your supply. That's my money.
And also, like, didn't somebody during the, like, we had a severe drought. It was like the worst drought in like 100 years
this
or
year.
Something. Yeah.
Yeah. The, it was
and
the,
somebody was the like,
last, least amount of rain in July. In
we talk about it with yeah. Tom, but somebody was like, our flow is awesome. You're like, is somebody open feeding? Because like yeah. you don't even know, is it honey, is it syrup? Like
they're bringing in so much nectar, you're like, do you know where it's coming from?
Yeah.
So you can keep feeding this 2 to 1 until daytime temps are consistently below 50 degrees. So again, we feed 2 to 1. I just started feeding using gallon buckets. So prior to that, I would put in 1, 2, 3, even 4 quart size mason jars, and I poke some holes in the lid and I put those upside down. I got a little past myself. So you got your hive, right? You put an inner cover on, you know, above the top brood box. You don't want to feed ever when you've supers on. There's no purpose in that. That's not honey. So you feed, you got your 3 medium brood boxes or your 2 deeps or whatever your method is. And then put an inner cover down, and then I put feed on top of the inner cover, and then I will put a hive, another box on that. It's essentially acting as like a big shim. So I would do 1 to 4 quart size containers, mason jars, with 2 to 1 syrup in them. Now I'm actually using a gallon bucket, and I have this lid that is like a screen. You know who sells it? Better Bee sells these. I'm sure they're sold all over the place, but you can get them on Better Bee. It's the same cap that we use on our like temporary nuke boxes. It's like this yellow inverted cap. It's that same cap, and it has a screen glued on it and a couple holes punched in. And what that allows you to do is you just drill a 2-inch hole in your bucket, in the lid of your bucket. I mean, I guess you put it on the bottom, but whatever. We do it in the lid. And you flip that upside down, and it it acts as a little feeder spot. And, you know, with the magic of gravity and syrup and water, it doesn't drip out on its own. They, like, take it.
Sometimes it does. You have to be careful.
It doesn't. That doesn't ever, unless you're doing it wrong.
Okay.
And
it doesn't. Guess I've done it wrong before.
When you flip it upside down, at first some will come down. But as soon as the, I don't know what the physics term is, but as soon as that happens, it does not drip at all. Especially with 2 to 1.
2 to 1 definitely yeah. doesn't.
But I put that down, and then it gives bees. They have, you know, so many bees at once can drink from it. It's not like there's just a couple holes that limits the amount of activity where the bees can grab it and go back down. It's a lot. It's a good amount. It's, you know, 2-inch diameter circle that they are able to feed from. And because they're able to get so much nectar, so much syrup at once, they store it. Now, say you only gave them 1 quart at a time, and that quart just had a few holes poked into it, right? That might be enough. That really is just what they are currently consuming in order to get enough energy to do their daily tasks. So you're not actually adding to their stores in that case. You're just kind of like keeping the level the same the whole time, which, yes, means that they maybe gives them the ability to go get some natural stuff and store it. But when you need them to bulk up, you need to give them a lot of syrup at once, and they need to have a lot of access points to get the syrup. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally.
Cool. Oh, our 17-year-old dog is like, I'm going to pee if you don't let me out right now. We don't have that much more. So I started feeding 1 gallon at a time. And you want to take a break and let him out?
No, I just turn my microphone off and I'll go let him pee real quick.
Okay.
And you can drop knowledge on people.
So you got to feed. You got to give them a lot of feed. A bulk amount of food that they can bring into the hive easily. So I'm really excited to be using these gallon buckets.
It's also nice because we have an apiary not at our house.
Yeah.
So we can fill up. We don't, because they can guzzle down a mason jar of feed really quickly.
Oh yeah. When you don't have access to go every day, then you need to give them a gallon at a time.
But I mean, people that are doing that already know that, I guess.
So we haven't started feeding any of our hives yet. Except for these resource nukes that we continuously feed, but we haven't started giving 2-to-1 syrup to anybody yet. But when we do, you know, I'm currently making like literally like 30 of these feeders. And I'm excited because it's so much easier. You know, they'll take it down in 3-4 days, no doubt about it. But we also don't deplete our hives of all their honey where, you know, we're really just like topping them off.
Well, you know what you've been doing that really has been a big game changer is filling up a honey bucket with a gate
with a honey syrup. Gate, yeah.
And that is so much easier because we were like, you got to pour these things and you just honey gate it out. And that's been like really nice.
Yeah. So I bought a few honey gates in the beginning of the year and I just turned some buckets into, you know, honey buckets with the gate on them. And one of them I use, I'm just if I start getting low, I just refill it with syrup and then it's there always. And it's just so much easier to work with. It's a little pain in the ass to like pour the syrup out of the honey gate. You'd got to kind of be careful because it's aggressive. You know, honey is so thick. It's nice and calm when it comes out, but the syrup is not.
Do it over a sink.
But yeah. Luckily we have like a utility sink in the laundry room, but you know, look at these hives. If they don't have many stores right now, now might be the time to start feeding them. And you got to bulk them up. And, you know, I do the pickup test to see how heavy it is. But you got to start getting them going now.
It's all about observation. Beekeeping is about observation. This is just another observation that needs to be made.
And it's about knowing your flow. You got to know your flow. You got to understand. We know that goldenrod cranks in this area. We know we can smell it when they're bringing it in. There's something about goldenrod that not every year, the plant itself doesn't always give off nectar. Sometimes the plants hold on to nectar themselves, and although you'll see goldenrod, you won't smell it. When you can smell it in your apiary, you know they're bringing it in, and when, like we said before, when it stops, we know that the flows are all basically over, and it's time to act very quickly at that point. So, you know your flow. Just understand what's going on. All right, so say you've got a hive right now that you're like, you're hearing this and you go, dude, I got a weak hive. And I don't think we should try to limp this thing into winter. Guess what? You're good, dude. You can merge that hive. And now is the time to merge.
This is why you want 2 hives and not 1.
True that. So.
And a nuke.
And guess what?
2 hives and a nuke.
Now's the time you want to merge because you don't want that weak hive making fat bees. You don't want that weak hive making the winter bees. There's something wrong in that weak hive. That's why it's weak. You want to nix that queen and you want to introduce that to a hive that has a strong queen. Or maybe you have 2 weak hives and you want to get a new queen and merge them together. Whatever it is, you don't want a weak hive making weak winter bees. So some people will hold off and go like, oh, I'll see what I want to merge come October. Guess what? They've already made the winter bees come October. So now you're merging the winter bees together, but you're merging weak ass skinny bees, not badass fat bees in. And then you're setting them up for disaster. So look at your apiary right now, go identify the hives that you find to be weak. And you can tell when you've got more than one hive, you can see the differences. And you got to go, hey, you got to rip the Band-Aid off, and we got to merge that hive. But if you merge it now, it's when the winter bees are starting to get made, and that just makes total sense to me. Nobody's ever said that to me. And when I was making the notes for this episode, I went, you got to merge early. You can't wait till they're making winter bees and then merge. That doesn't make any sense.
Well, and also, if somebody, I'm just thinking of somebody, like, I don't want to deplete, like, I don't want to get rid of a hive, but if you merge and you have a healthy hive, you can split that hive early next year and just, like, get it back in boomtown.
Yeah. And by doing it now, it gives those bees the time to get that equilibrium right on their own.
Yeah.
And they will, those pheromones of those worker bees will tell that queen, or they will nip at her butt and not let her lay too many eggs because they know the population's too big, and they'll self-regulate and they'll come to that proper equilibrium. If you're merging two hives late October, they won't have the ability to do that. And you know, you might've just thrown fire or oil on fire, whatever. It's not good.
That is interesting, because this year I feel like we have learned that, or at least I have, is when you are changing the dynamics of the hive, there is a certain equilibrium that kind of gets thrown off, the amount of like nurse bees that you have, the amount of foragers, and they can change.
But it's not immediate.
Yeah, they can change their jobs, but
and
like,
literally their DNA changes.
Yeah.
So cool.
The Vitagelin is the coolest.
I'm but team they need
time. Yeah, they need time.
So, all right. What do we learn?
A lot. I feel like this was good. The most important was make airmail cocktails.
Make an airmail
really good.
Pre-prohibition cocktail brought to us by our friend Mike Landers.
And get your cocktail glasses from the thrift store, because otherwise they're very expensive.
Yeah, it's so. I'm going to go buy more.
And also, speaking of winter, Cara Jo Skincare has very good winter
this
skincare.
Episode brought to you by Cara Jo Skincare and Bee Farm.
And we're kind of playing around with some skincare and some propolis and some...
Playing around?
Yeah, test kitchen,
this ain't a game.
It is a game. It's all playing around. We're just playing around, testing stuff out.
So Cara has... One of her first ever products was Rejuvenating Facial Serum.
Yeah.
And it's so good. It's like... It's
best. It's magic for your face.
It lets your face... will create its own sebum, and it allows your face to come to your
equilibrium
it yourself, sure, just like the bees.
Sure.
What's
does.
Up? Full circle. But Cara is messing around with turning that facial serum into like a bomb.
Yeah.
With some propolis in the mix.
Yeah. So testing
test
that
kitchen.
Out. But you know, just like everything shifts for the bees, your skin is changing because the temperature and the ambient.
We eat seasonally.
Atmosphere.
You know, we will eat spicier foods in the winter.
Because they warm you up.
They warm you up. Like, literally, they warm you up. It's better for your body. Your skincare regimens change by season. The bees' DNA changes by season. We're seasonal creatures. And I do love that Cara Jo Skincare and Bee Farm, like, matches up with that, and it's like a part of the naturalness of what that is. It's cool. It's really cool. I didn't know.
So check it out.
I had like Pert Plus, and I think I used that for
you loved
shaving
SpaghettiOs
cream
when I met you.
I think I still love SpaghettiOs. I just haven't had one since I met you, but I can taste it still.
I can taste it, and I don't like it.
I also haven't had Taco Bell, I don't think, since I met you.
Good.
And every time I drive by a Taco Bell, I taste it, and I'm like, should I go get a 6-pack of tacos?
And
I don't.
And then spend 2 days in the bathroom?
Ew.
That's
so,
why you shouldn't do.
All right. First things first, most importantly, you should buy some Cara Jo Skincare. We ship everywhere. We shipped to Hawaii recently. We shipped to California all the time. We got some shout out to our California fans. You guys are awesome. Second thing, got to help your bees make fat bees. You got to help
guys.
Your bees make fat bees, because these fat bees are everything when it comes to spring, and that comes to honey production next year. It's all about fat boy, fat bees. And you know, if you listen to this, you know, hopefully, how you can help them, how you can identify if they need help, if you need to merge, if you need to do whatever. If you got questions, hit us up. We love questions.
And also, if you have like B-side suggestions, we would love B-side suggestions.
Yeah, some beekeeping adjacent.
Yeah.
We do have a buddy that's pretty knowledgeable at the wine game.
Yeah, we're gonna do like a wine cool. bee, honey bee, a
little tasting,
or not honey bee, honey tasting.
You know what I want? I want. I said this to him. What's up, Steve? I said I want to know what makes you like the processes of honey of winemakers. Like, what makes you like some processes and not like other processes? Just like, you know, we know the ingredients we don't want in our food, but we don't know about wine.
Right.
Like, what is it that separates wine beyond taste? I think that would be really cool to learn. So maybe he can teach us that.
We've got a lot to learn.
But
let's learn it, people.
Hell yeah. Together.
Yeah. All right. If you made it this far,
you are a rock star. We thank you so much. Go out, buy some Carajo skincare.
buy some Prosecco and some.
If you're in our area of southeastern Pennsylvania, our buddy Dave just opened up a new location. Do you want to just give him a quick shout out?
Yeah, where is Dave's,
it's in Huntington Valley.
Huntington Valley, Dave's Backyard Farms.
So he's got one location in Elkins Park. He's another location that he just opened in Huntington Valley. It's
blowing up.
It's so good.
Yeah, he's got local, organic, all like amazing. He's got everything. He's got meat. He's got veggies. He's got our soap. He's got honey. He's got CBD joints. He has got everything.
I love me some joints.
Yeah, he's got everything.
The other spot I want to shout out is Hirschberger Heritage Farm here in, I think it's probably Sellersville, Pennsylvania. But it's where we've been getting most of our meat lately.
I think they might ship.
And dudes and dudettes, their meat is just so good. And we trust the source. It's so cool. It's like, we know the farms we're getting our veggies from. We know the mushroom provider we're getting our mushroom. We know where we're getting our meat from. We know we're getting our bread from. Shout out Ursa Bakery. But if you're not in this area, find look these spots.
That. Yeah. And hopefully, I mean, not everybody is that fortunate that they can have that. But I think
however,
it's
I think
kind
beekeepers
like,
that are listening to a beekeeping podcast, I feel like they have that ability.
Hopefully.
I hope. We tend to ramble at the very end here. Y'all are great. We love you. Thank
you're
you so much.
Stars.
You're rock stars. We appreciate it. Peace. Thanks, y'all.